Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled old Marley's, Jane. Bah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings. Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled old Marley's, Jane. Bah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
You're listening to the Preacher's Side Chick Murder Trial of Latasha Daniels from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
Are you maybe seated? Welcome
back. I say you might find your next witness. I'm going to call Ray Palladino.
Come on with me, sir. Come this way. Come on with me, sir. We'll stand here.
Yes, sir.
Face the judge. Raise your right hand.
You swear and affirm to tell the whole truth?
I do.
All right, you may have a seat, sir. Seat.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Would you state your name and spell it for the court, please?
Sure. Raymond, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D. Last name, Palladino, P-A-L-A-D-I-N-O.
You live in Memphis, Mr. Palladino?
I do not.
Where do you live?
I live in Cabot, Arkansas.
What is your occupation?
I am the general manager of Fort Thompson Sporting Goods in Sherwood, Arkansas.
And how far is Sherwood, Arkansas from Memphis, Tennessee?
Depending on Interstate 40, roughly 2.5 hours.
You drove it this morning?
I did, yes, sir.
Thanks for being here for
sure.
It. Tell me about Fort Thompson Sporting Goods. What kind of store is that?
Well, we do a lot of hunting. We sell a lot of hunting stuff, firearms. We do the shooting sports stuff. No fishing, but mainly just the hunting and the
so hunting clothes, sports. Anything to do with hunting.
You
so.
Betcha.
Okay.
Firearms, ammo, yeah, everything.
Tell me a little bit about kind of the process you have to do to keep records when you sell a firearm to someone.
So when you sell a firearm, you do a background check. It's called a 4473. That's just a number they give it. We have to keep those sheets in our possession as long as we have that FFL number, which means your federal firearms license number. Okay. So we have thousands of them.
So someone would have to provide you some suitable form of identification before they could purchase a firearm from you?
Correct. It has to be a state-issued photo ID.
Do you recall being contacted by Detective Chris Roberts from the Collierville Police Department sometime early April of 2019?
I do, yes, sir.
What was he asking you about?
He was asking when she came in, the firearm she had purchased, did we have video in the store, which we did, and we do, and if he could have copies of that and come pick it up from us.
And so I think you already answered my question. You do have video in the store.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
Were you able to locate the sale that he was inquiring about?
Yes, sir.
Did you provide him a receipt?
Yes,
sir. That was
yes.
from that purchase? Did you provide him the video of the individual who purchased the firearm that he was inquiring about?
We did, yes, sir.
Let me hand you, this has previously been marked as Exhibit 7, and I just want to ask you if that is the receipt that you, in fact, gave to Detective Roberts.
That is it.
And so that receipt shows a lot of things, doesn't it?
Correct, yes, sir.
It shows the individual who purchased it.
Correct.
It shows the date and time they purchased it.
It does.
Which was what?
That was 4/4/19. The time was 4:37 p.m.
Right. And it shows who purchased it.
Correct.
What was the name of the individual that purchased it?
Latasha Daniels.
And does it also show anything specific about that handgun?
Well, they'll tell you the model and the serial number on our receipts.
Tell me about a serial number. What is that?
So every firearm has a serial number, and there is never supposed to be a duplicate. So if this is a number, it's that firearm, and it can be traced forever.
Look at that. I'm going to hand you what's also been previously marked in exhibit and ask you, to look in that box and mm-hmm. identify that.
That is a Ruger EC9S 9mm.
Can you tell me, with both the receipt and the firearm in your hand, if that is the firearm that was sold by that receipt?
I can. We turn it over here so you don't ever point a firearm. This is it, yes, sir.
So you can confirm, based on that information, that Latosha Daniels purchased that firearm on April the 4th of 2019 at 4:37 p.m. from your store in Sherwood, Arkansas?
Correct, 100%.
Right. One more thing I want you to look at. When Detective Roberts initially contacted you, did you take some still shots from your store video surveillance system?
Correct. Our IT gentleman did, Steve.
And is that one of the still shots that you provided to Detective Roberts?
Yes, sir, it is.
And what you're looking at, it's already been published, but that mm-hmm. did come from your store at that time?
100%, yes, sir.
That's all the questions I have.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Palladino.
Good afternoon.
Had to make sure.
Yes.
I just have a couple questions
sure.
for you, okay? This 4473 that you talked about, can you tell me a little bit more about what that is?
So what it is the background check. First of all, you have to have a state picture ID issue. You fill out the background check. We run it through, it's called a NICS system, all right, which is a National Tracing Center background check. And you get proceeded, or you may get delayed, or you may get denied, or what have you. And if you're proceeded, that means you are legally to buy a firearm in our state of Arkansas.
And that means no felony convictions, no domestic violence convictions, things like that?
Correct. There's a number of questions on that sheet that you have to answer yes or no to, and it's very well detailed.
Now, with it being very well detailed and having to go through this process, mm-hmm. how long does that process normally take in store?
So it normally takes the customer roughly 7-8, sometimes a little longer, to fill out the sheet. We immediately sit down at the computer and put in the database. Now, a lot of times you'll see common last names, Smith, Brown, Johnson. You know, it may take a little longer for that to clear because there's a lot of us, So, but there's some that come back instant. Some may take 10, 15, 20. I've seen it take an hour, hour and a half to come back.
And you didn't actually help Miss Daniels in the store that day, right?
I did not.
So you don't know how long her background check took?
I don't.
But based on what you saw in the video, you see that she got proceeded.
Yes, 100%. Yes, ma'am.
Which means she provided your store a state-issued ID, uh-huh. and she passed a background
check.
That's
right. Yes, ma'am.
So she was authorized to purchase a firearm.
Correct.
Now, I want to talk to you about your store for just a second, uh-huh. okay? You have a wide variety of firearms.
We do, yes, ma'am.
You have handguns.
We do.
You have long guns.
We do.
Everything from a teeny tiny little, those little itty bitty guns that you see,
yes,
all the way up to rifles.
Yes, you bet. Yes, okay. ma'am.
And is it fair to say that guns vary widely in size?
Yes, they do.
Is it fair to say that guns vary widely in weight?
Correct.
Is it fair to say that guns vary widely in price?
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Guns can be really expensive.
They can get very expensive.
What do you think is the most expensive gun that you have in the store?
Probably now, roughly, and I could be off, but we have a Beretta shotgun in there that's around $6,000.
Whoa. What do you think is the least expensive gun that you have in there?
We have probably a .22 revolver that ranges in the close to upper ones.
Okay, and the .22, that's going to be typically less expensive than a 9mm.
Correct, in most cases, yes, ma'am. Not all, but most.
9mm, what do they usually start around?
Roughly mid twos, and you can go up to $4,000 or $5,000, depending on if it's a customer.
And when you have them displayed in your store. Mm-hmm. Do you have them up on the wall or do you have them in a case?
They're on the wall.
Okay. And so you have the gun itself and the price?
Correct. Yes, ma'am.
So when you're shopping, if you said, I want a gun this much money, you could pick that up on the wall.
Yeah, I may ask, what are you looking for and what kind of price range, and then we can go from there.
Do you recall having that gun in stock? Do you still have it in stock?
That one, I think we still have some. The model's kind of switched up over the years, but yeah.
Do you recall having a purple version of that?
We have had a purple, yes.
And the purple version was more expensive than that one, right?
It maybe was somewhat, yes.
Now the receipt, I want to talk to you about that quickly. I think you've still got it up there.
Mm-hmm.
The time you indicated was at 4:37 p.m.
Correct.
And all of the information that you have on that receipt matches Miss Daniels, right? She didn't give a false ID or anything like that.
No.
And that's 4:37 p.m. Central Time.
Central Standard Time, yes.
And it took you about 2.5 hours to get down to 201 Poplar today.
Roughly, yes, ma'am.
Okay. About that particular gun, if you would mind opening it up
sure.
for me. We talked about the fact that guns vary significantly in size and weight.
Correct.
If you wouldn't mind just picking that one up.
Mm-hmm.
That is a smaller handgun, right?
Correct.
It is a lighter handgun.
Correct.
That's all I have, Your Honor.
No, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
So we're going to take a break for lunch, and then we'll reconvene this afternoon. So I'm going to show you excuse for lunch. We're still not ready to discuss the case, okay? So we'll see you back this afternoon. The show court in recess.
Court stands in recess. Jury, leave your pen and pad in the chair and follow me.
You may be seated. Welcome back. I hope you had a good lunch. All right, stay in my car.
Dr. Eric Curry, your honor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Will you state your name and spell it for the court reporter and the jury, please?
Dr. Erica Curry, E-R-I-C-A-C-U-R-R-Y.
And Dr. Curry, are you a licensed medical doctor?
I am.
In what state?
Tennessee, Arkansas, New Mexico, Texas, Illinois previously, and those are the ones I can think of right now.
And how long have you been a medical doctor?
For going on 14 years. Well, in forensic pathology. I graduated medical school in 2005, and technically I was a medical doctor then, so if you want to say 20 years, but in forensic pathology, 14 years.
And that was, do you specialize in any particular field of medicine?
Yes, so my first specialization was in pathology, which is commonly known as the study of disease. So we're probably commonly known as the doctors that if you go get something taken out during surgery or biopsy, and they say they send it to the lab for the doctor to look at, that's us as pathologists. So after receiving specialization and board certification in pathology, and then I received certification in forensic pathology, which is basically doing autopsies to determine the cause of death, meaning why somebody died and the manner of death, which we have five categories of.
And approximately how many autopsies have you done during your career?
About greater than 2,200.
Have you testified as an expert in courts in Tennessee prior to this?
Yes.
Other states as well?
No, just primarily Tennessee.
Just primarily Tennessee. Do you know how many times approximately?
Greater than 50.
Okay. Your Honor, state moves that Dr. Curry be declared an expert in the field of forensic pathology.
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. We'll declare Dr. Erica Curry is an expert in the field of forensic pathology.
On April 5th of 2019, where were you employed?
At the West Tennessee Regional Forensic Center, also known as the Shelby County Medical Examiner's Office.
And did you perform an autopsy that day on an individual named Brodus Perry?
Yes.
Can you explain to the jury what an autopsy is, kind of what's involved and what the purpose of an autopsy is?
So if someone is deemed what's called under medical examiner jurisdiction, which is classified as an unexpected or violent death, they are brought into the medical examiner's office for an examination. And then whether an inspection of the body or a complete autopsy is determined whether either one of those is needed. When they come in, they're given a unique identifying number, which is the year, and we start from one all the way to the last day of the year at whatever that number is. Then we're examine the deceased person. We examine the outside of the body. We take whatever necessary evidence there is, clothing, fingernail clippings, hair. Then we do x-rays if needed, especially in the case of a homicide. And then we document everything we see on the outside of the body, the hair color, the eye color, the weight, the length, any scars, any tattoos, and certainly any injuries. And we document those often on what's called a body diagram, which is just a representation of the human body. So then after we do that, then we examine everything on the inside of the body to document any injuries and look at all the organs and document any injuries we see on the organs and the weight of any natural disease we see on the organ. During that process, we actually take blood and other samples to send off to the toxicology lab to test for substances that were in the body at the time the person died. So then after we make those notes, and then we put together a report documenting everything we found.
And did you give the autopsy that you performed on Brodus Perry a number?
Yes.
And what number was that?
It's 2019-0582.
And did you took photos? I guess you said you would take photos in this particular autopsy. Did you take photos?
Photos were taken by the autopsy assistant that helps you, or technician that helps you.
Can you describe to the jury the injuries that you, if any, that you found when you performed this autopsy on Mr. Perry?
Yes, I'm going to refer to my notes. So Mr. Perry had a gunshot wound of the head. It entered on the right side of the head. It fractured a bone close by where it entered, and then it also fractured the bone of his right eye, and then it also caused some injuries to the brain, and then it traveled into the mouth where it injured the tongue, and then the bullet went through the left side of his jaw and injured the jawbone, and then the bullet lodged on the left side of his jaw and then created a wound right above where it lodged, which was what I termed a partial exit wound, meaning the bullet didn't go completely out. And then he had three gunshot wounds of his abdomen on the right upper portion. Those went into his abdomen or stomach cavity, injured his intestines and his liver, and then it also injured his right adrenal gland, which is a endocrine organ that sits above the kidney, and then it completely made his right kidney go into two halves. So those are the injuries that happened on the abdomen, and then there were three bullets recovered associated with those gunshot wounds, one in the spine, one from the back, and one from his left hip. And then he had a gunshot wound that was on his right buttock, and then it went into the soft tissue and muscle of the right buttock, causing hemorrhage, and then it traveled into his right side of his lower back, where a bullet was recovered from there. And then he had a graze wound, just meaning the bullet went past the skin and didn't go into the body. He had one of those on his right upper arm, and then one on the front of his left wrist.
I can hand you a picture and ask you if you can identify that, please.
Yes, I can.
And is that a photo you took of one of the wounds you just described to the jury?
It was a photo taken at the time of autopsy, not by me, but the autopsy technician, but yes, of the wound of the head.
And does that accurately depict what you observed while taking that autopsy, while doing, performing that autopsy?
Yes.
Judge, I would ask that be marked next exhibit, please.
No objection. We'll show 8315 as a photo of a wound of the head.
And may I publish that for the jury, please?
Yes.
So what we're looking at there, you described that as, if I understood your testimony correctly, that was the entrance wound that went all the way across down through his jaw and almost came down the other side. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So let me hand you another picture and ask you if you can identify that.
Yes, this is
a picture of the deceased's face, and you can see that wound on the left side of his jaw where the bullet almost came out, but the bullet is actually underneath it.
Can I make that next exhibit, please, Your Honor?
No objection. We'll show it as a photo of the wound on the left side of the jaw.
And may I publish that, Your Honor?
Yes.
And so that's the photograph you just identified, is that correct?
That's correct.
And again, you described it as a partial exit wound, meaning the bullet is still there, but the injury that we see is where the bullet almost exited the body. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you...
Yes, this is the picture of the entrance gunshot wound that was on the right buttock.
Judge, I would ask that to come next to you, please.
No objection. We'll mark exhibit 17 as the entrance of the wound to the right buttock.
And if I may publish that.
Yes.
And so is this the picture that you just identified, Dr. Kirk?
Yes.
And that entered, stayed in the body, and you recovered that bullet from while performing the autopsy?
That's correct.
And you... Can you identify that photo?
Yes, this is a picture of the deceased's right arm and kind of the right side of his chest and abdomen. It's picturing the graze wound or the wound where the bullet went by the skin and didn't actually go in of his right upper arm. And you can also see two of the gunshot wounds that are on his abdomen.
And may I publish that? Oh, I want to make that the next exhibit, please.
No objection. Mark 6 through 18 is a photo of the wounds of the right arm and right part of his chest.
And may I publish that, Your Honor?
Yes.
And I think, Dr. Curry, when that printed, it cut off actually a little bit of that. Is this the photo that you just identified?
With one extra wound, yes.
Yeah. So the three that we see, the 4, 2, and the one below the two, are those the three wounds that you talked about, the three bullets that went into the abdomen?
Yes. Should be numbered 2, 3, and 4. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then 6 is one of the two graze wounds that you testified about.
That's correct.
So you recovered the bullet from the head, you recovered those three from the abdomen?
Yes.
And you recovered the one from the back? From the back?
Buttock, yes. The bullet from, it came from the back, but it's corresponding to the bullet that entered on the right buttock.
And I have one more photo, which is the, I'll let you tell us what it is.
Yes, it's a picture of the graze wound that was on the front of his left wrist, yes.
I'd like to make that the next exhibit, Your Honor.
No objection. Show exhibit 19 as a photo of the wound on the left wrist.
And may I publish that for the jury?
Yes.
And Dr. Curry, is this the photo that you just identified?
Yes.
And tell us what happens when you recover evidence, or in this case particularly bullets, while performing the autopsy.
So they're packaged in a sealed evidence envelope. I initial and date them, and then they're put together with other evidence that we take at the time of autopsy, clothing, fingernail clippings, hair, and any of the other evidence we take. And then they're logged and then placed into our the evidence room at the West Tennessee Regional Forensic Center, and eventually picked up by the investigating police agency.
And you'll have to open this. This is still sealed. I'm going to ask you if you can open that and identify the contents of that package.
These are the bullets that were recovered from the deceased at the time of the autopsy, and the sealed evidence envelopes still with the seal tag, the date, and my initials.
And there's five total of those?
Yes.
Judge, I would ask that those five be made collectively an exhibit, the bullets recovered during the autopsy.
Your Honor, I think these have all been already marked as Exhibit 6.
Oh, that may be true.
They are.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you. Of those wounds, were any of them or all of them fatal on their own, or was it a combination, or can you testify to that?
So the ones in the head and the abdomen certainly were very significant wounds, in my opinion, that would have led directly to death. The one in the right abdomen, because it mostly just caused hemorrhage where the trachea went through, wouldn't have been fatal in my opinion.
And so based on your expertise and your examination during that autopsy, were you able to form an expert opinion concerning the cause of mass death?
Yes.
And what was that?
Multiple gunshot wounds.
And the manner of death?
Homicide, which for forensic terms means death at the hands of another.
That's all the questions I have.
Cross-examination.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Dr. Curry.
Good afternoon.
Don't have many questions for you, but I have a couple, okay?
Sure.
First, just kind of going from what you just said, homicide. In your profession, I can never say this word, that is an epidemiological assessment, right?
That's correct.
What does that mean?
For once we fill the death certificate and it has the cause and manner of death, it is analyzed in this state by the state of Tennessee vital statistics in order to, run the numbers of the different categories of death.
So a category of death could be homicide.
Yes.
Could be suicide.
That's correct.
Could be natural.
That's correct.
Are there any others?
Yes. It is natural, then accident, and then could not be determined or undetermined.
Okay. So when you determine that something is a homicide, that is not an indication of criminal intent, right?
Not from a forensic pathologist standpoint. That's correct.
So when you say homicide, you do not... That does not equal premeditated murder.
No.
That equals more than one person was involved.
That equals for us that the death occurred at the hands of another person.
Okay. So nothing about your assessment gives any assessment to Ms. Daniels' mindset.
That's correct.
Okay. I want to talk to you about each of the individual shots briefly, okay? And you have your report.
I do.
You have them labeled A, B, C, D, E.
That's correct.
And you also have numerical designation.
That's correct.
For A, do you have an A1? Is that kind of how that works, that you...
So the numerical is for picture-taking purposes and to be able to refer to them in the report. And then the alphabetical is just the way I notate the report is just described from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet. So it's just the ordering system.
And the numbers and letters that you assign to it don't have any bearing on the order in which those injuries occur.
That's correct.
So on gunshot wound A, that was the gunshot wound to the head.
That's correct.
And one would be the entrance wound.
That's correct.
And two would be the exit wound.
Well, in this case, five was the exit wound on this one because the because of just the way the ordering went with this one.
And so the entrance wound was about here, right?
Yes.
And the exit wound was about here.
Well, yeah, where the bullet almost went out. So we call it a partial, but yes.
So when you have these two points, mm-hmm. you're able to determine a trajectory.
That's correct.
What is a trajectory?
So just the way the bullet traverses inside or on the body once it enters and then through and exits. So
the trajectory, when you make your trajectory assessments, you base it on anatomical position, right?
Yes.
What does that mean?
So just basically it is, and we do this just to standardize the way we notate injuries. Basically it's the representation of the human body with someone standing with their palms facing up. So stand it facing you with
so
their, yes.
Like this.
Yes.
This would be the anatomical position. In reality, when things are actually happening, this is very rarely the position in which people were, right?
We, like I said, do that to standardize, but we do realize that when people are injured, that's not all the time the way they are positioned, so yes.
And the trajectory of the bullet is determined by the position of the decedent's body and the position of the person with the gun, right?
Yes.
So if I'm shooting you right here, you're not, and you're looking at me just like this, you would have a gunshot wound right here and it would go pretty straight through your back, right?
Yes.
Whereas if I'm standing on your side, same thing, right?
Yes.
And if you lean over, that's going to change.
That's correct.
If you lean over or back, it's going to give an upward or downward deviation.
Can, yes.
Okay. So when we look at gunshot wound A, you noted a trajectory on that of being right to left. And that's indicating his right side to his left side.
That's correct.
Downward.
Yes.
So that. Mm-hmm. And slightly back to front.
Correct.
So you cannot say that he was standing here like this when that kind of angle is involved.
That's
right?
Correct.
Would that kind of angle be consistent with someone falling?
If their head was going downward and the bullet was traversing downward, that, in my opinion, would be consistent with that.
So if you had this angle and they're falling,
you have to tell me the position of the gun because I'm not certain on the position of the gun. So
can that kind of downward angle be created by someone falling? Can that be consistent?
It could be.
It could also be consistent with having an upward angle. It just depends on how the body's positioned.
Well, from the trajectory, it's traversing downward. So once again, I would have to know where the gun was in relation to the body to say that. Yes, sir.
Okay. And so one of the things that you also looked at was soot, stippling, and muzzle imprint, right?
That's correct.
And on every one of these gunshot wounds, there was no soot, stippling, or muzzle imprint.
That's correct.
So let's take each of those individually. What is soot?
So soot is the black material that comes out of the end of the gun.
Okay. And that is something that you can use to make a distance determination between the person and the muzzle of the gun, right?
We can estimate, yes.
Okay. And that's usually for soot about, what, 4 feet? Four or more. 4 feet?
For soot. For soot to be around the wound, as yes. you're asking? It would have to be a close range gunshot wound, which means inches. Close or inches. For soot to be around the wound.
Okay. I'm sorry, I jumped ahead of you. This is the 4 feet stippling.
No.
Yeah, tell me which one is the 4 feet.
So if there's lack of soot and if there's lack of stippling, then from measurements and previous studies, then we can say that the gunshot wound is indeterminate or distant, and we have to be sure with indeterminate that there was nothing blocking the soot from getting onto the body. And if we exclude that, then we say distant, and that means that from when the gun was fired to hitting the body, there was 3 feet or greater distance between.
So the 3 feet or greater, that's the indeterminate.
Yes.
And that determination, 3, 4 feet, whatever, it also depends on what type of weapon is being used.
That's correct.
Right? So if you have soot stippling muzzle imprint, you're within that 3 foot.
Right. Range. And to your point, the only way to know exactly is to actually test fire the gun with the ammunition that was used, and you would know specifically, accurately what it would be.
And the muzzle imprint, that would be an actual contact wound.
That's
right?
correct.
And none of those things were present here.
That's correct.
So the indications by what you saw is that the muzzle of the gun was 3 feet or more away from Mr. Perry.
That's correct.
The two graze wounds that you indicated, I wanted to talk to you about those briefly, okay? Typically, particularly with the position of the graze wounds, those do not necessarily indicate separate shots, right?
That's correct.
Especially that one on the right side,
yes.
It is most likely a graze wound of one of the entrance or entrance.
I can't say most likely, but it's a possibility that.
It's consistent with that.
It could be okay. From one of the entrances on the abdomen.
Okay, and then on direct, you were discussing whether any of these on their own would have been fatal.
Yes.
And I'm trying to make sure I heard you correctly. You indicated that the head wound and one of the abdominal wounds, I thought you said could have been fatal on their own.
So the head wound and the abdominal wounds, because they were grouped together as a cluster because they co-mingled, all of those would have been fatal. The one on the buttock, in my opinion, would not have been there.
Okay, and the one of the abdomen ones that was pretty shallow.
No, they all entered into the abdominal cavity. So
there were three in the abdomen, right?
That's correct.
I thought you indicated two of the ones. I thought you said two of the abdominal shots could have been fatal. One of them, no.
All three could have been because they all entered into the abdominal cavity, all caused injuries in the intestine and the liver and the kidney. So they all three caused the injuries inside.
Are all of those necessarily fatal?
Because I couldn't tell this bullet hit this specifically, this bullet hit that one specifically, then I couldn't say that, you know, these two didn't, these two, that's why they're grouped together, because when they got inside the body, they
okay. kind of. I understand what you're saying a little bit better now.
Yes.
Thank you. Excuse me. A wound to the kidney is not necessarily fatal, right?
In this instance, it is because it made the kidney go into two halves.
Okay.
So now you do have another kidney, but the bleeding from that having one of your kidney being two halves is pretty devastating.
And this is a question I don't know the answer to. Right. On these, with these injuries, would, you know, prompt an appropriate medical attention, could that make it not fatal? Is it fatal just because of the injury, or is it fatal untreated?
So he did have medical attention and did have attempted surgery because there were some surgery inside of his intestine, and they weren't able to revive him from that.
But you were able to tell that they did try
yes.
Medical intervention.
That they definitely.
Which would indicate when he got to the hospital, he was alive.
Yes.
Okay. And nothing about your assessment can go to intent or type of homicide, right?
That's correct.
That's all I have.
No questions.
You're not ready to discuss the case, okay? So we're going to show you excuse for the day. We're going to come back in the morning, get a good night's rest, enjoy dinner, and we'll see you back tomorrow.
George, for sure, leave your pads in the chair for me.
We do anticipate proof. We anticipate 3 to 4 witnesses.
Okay. All right, so I will adjourn court for today. I'll see you in the morning.
All rise. Court adjourned tomorrow morning, 9:30 for trial.
There's more of the Preacher's Side Chick murder trial of Latasha Daniels coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.